For January 26th, 2024, we talk about POW World, Against the Storm, Grime, and much more. Welcome to Level 487. My name is Cole Ross.
I'm Dennis Furia.
I'm Moxie.
And I'm Jala Prendez.
And you are listening to The Level. It's a podcast for people who love video games. I was doing some bookkeeping, and I was looking at the most recent episodes of the show, and I saw it had been forever since we had Jala on. So welcome back, Jala.
I know. Now, bear in mind, there were a couple of points where I was like, hey, y'all, I would like to be on an episode, and everyone ignored me. That's just how that goes sometimes.
Fine.
It's all good.
I apologize for that. Yeah.
I'm here now. It's a new year.
I gotta go read through our channel and find these.
Yeah.
Need receipts. That doesn't sound like me. Crippling anxiety at social interaction and wind up ignoring it, and then 10 days later it's too late to respond. And
yeah, it's falling off the back of Slack, and there it goes. Yeah.
Well, the thing is that whenever we start a show and we've got links going and everything in there, then everything gets buried anyway. So,
right. True.
Yes. That's the real reason why things fall off of Slack, because if they didn't, we'd constantly have to be worrying about things that we've ignored.
How have you been, Jala?
I'm all right, I guess. I say I guess because, I celebrated my 1 year wedding anniversary. Yay!
Woo-hoo! Congratulations!
It was frozen! And so we went to a winery, to this bed and breakfast at this winery that's like my favorite winery. I've been going there since I first turned 21 and I love it. And they have a bed and breakfast that's fully furnished with like antiques from all over the place. And I've always wanted to stay there and I've never had an occasion to go. And so I was like, we've got to do it for our first anniversary. I'm going to do this thing. So we go and we reserve it. And then there's massive like ice storm that comes down. And so when I was driving us up there, it's like I had to slow down to like 4 miles an hour in parts when I was going over some of those bridges. Because, in my area, we are not used to ice. And so everything closes. Nobody knows how to drive. And the cities and everything don't have like salt to put out on roadways or anything. They have sand, maybe, and sometimes we'll put sand out there, but there wasn't any sand on the road. So,
even with the roads, like there's still the worry about power too.
And then that was going out for different people. Anyway, so like the winery was calling us several times, like, are you really coming? Are you really coming? Are you really coming in the middle of the storm? And we're like, yep, we're still coming. This is the time we have our days off. This is our anniversary. We will be there. And when we get there, the innkeeper isn't there. Nobody is there. The door was open. The little fire was in the fireplace because they have like a gas fireplace with like a cover in front of it, so it's safe. And like the key was in a little envelope with a map. And I felt like I was in an adventure game because there was like some play sand outside to keep like the little walkway clear of ice. And then the play sand was by the door. And it just felt like I was supposed to be gathering clues. Anyway, so I had this like 12 room bed and breakfast place to myself with just me and Dave, and we got to hang out. Of course, again, everything was closed, so the wine room, like the tasting room and stuff was closed that first day. The second day, we weren't sure if it was going to open up or not, but then the maintenance guy managed to get the pipes and stuff de-iced enough to be functional. And so they did open like skin of their teeth at the last moment, but because everything was closed, the restaurant that is like our favorite restaurant was closed, everything. Cause like the restaurant there at the winery, the chef makes everything with the wines from the winery and pairs it with wines from the winery. So it's really, really good. And so we were really looking forward to eating there, and it was closed.
Right.
Damn, so, I wonder if you found anything to do locked in your room on your first anniversary.
Well, here's the thing, though. So, like, you know, we had the whole place to ourselves, so we got to, like, and then, too, because we knew that the tasting room was going to be closed, I was like, well, let's just bring some wine with us. Messinahoff wine, it's fine. We'll bring it up there. And so we had that and we just chilled and had the entire freaking place to ourselves. And it was very cool. Our room was Camelot themed. This is Messinahoff Winery, if anybody wants to look at it. I posted pictures and videos like on my social feeds, particularly on Instagram. So
how much do themes vary?
Well, there's themed rooms that are certain couples, like Lancelot and Guinevere, which is like the coolest room, in my opinion. Napoleon and Josephine, and that one's the second coolest room, in my opinion. Like Romeo and Juliet and whatever, like a bunch of different ones like that. There are other rooms that are places. So there was the Camelot, which is the fictional place. They also have Texas room. They have a Thomas Jefferson room. And I was like, oh my God, when I saw it, I was like, I bet we're going to end up in that room. Why? Because it is just lousy with like, you know, patriotic stuff. And I'm like, this is a room that makes me, room makes me feel very uncomfortable and I don't want to be in it. And there's also an eagle, which you can see if you go to their website and go look at the Thomas Jefferson room, an eagle that has an American flag painted all over it. And they have it up close in one of the photos. It's like apparently on one of the dressers. And I was like, oh my God, I'm not going to be able to handle being in that room. I bet you that's going to be the room we end up in. But no, thankfully we were in Camelot and it was okay.
Yeah, okay, you got the good one. That's good.
Yes, we got the Camelot room.
Camelot is definitely the best of those options.
Well, I don't know. Like, you should see how swank the first two I mentioned are the Lancelot and Guinevere, and then the Napoleon and Josephine rooms. Those are really cool. And they have big whirlpool tubs, jacuzzi tubs. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I mean, the first one is a tragedy, and the second one was a mass murder.
I know. I know. But then they also have like innocuous rooms that are just like Messina, which is like the part of Italy that the winemaker came from.
I can't get over Jala saying, I know, like Moxie had just said, oh, you know, George Clooney stayed in that room.
Well, anyway,
this is the world we live in.
But also I was like deathly ill the week beforehand. I had an aunt come to visit between Christmas and New Year's, and she made my mom sick, who then promptly sneezed and coughed without covering her face.
Ah, jeez.
And it went everywhere. Ooh. And got slowly but surely got everybody sick. But then as is usual for me, the little cold turned into, because I also fight allergies, a sinus infection, which then went into my ears and became an ear infection. I was battling all of that right leading up to going out of town, and I was still sick when we were out of town. So
you're saying your aunt came, but she oughtn't.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. So, but traveling during, that season, I'm actually very thankful that it was only a cold and not anything else, because the last time I got COVID, I was bedridden for like 2 months. So,
it laid you flat. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Anyway, I recovered from the brink of death, and I also didn't die on the ice, and I got to stay in a swank place, and it's very cool. You should check it out. And here I am. That's been my adventures, the big ones.
Cool. Well, I'm very happy that none of those catastrophes fully befell you. They're only minor versions of those catastrophes.
Yeah.
Cool. Moxie, how about you?
So I've likewise just been, trying to survive the, the big freeze in the area. Everything, shut down here. So, I don't have a ton to report.
Just a lot of trying to stay safe.
Staying warm. Yep.
Yeah.
I don't know. I was actually pretty surprised. They apparently have just no, snow plows here.
Mm-hmm.
I would think you'd at least keep like some of them that, whatever the ones are you like hooked to the front of a truck or whatever.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah. You know, just like just in a garage somewhere. It just,
But, apparently not. I guess I heard some noise. Apparently they used like deer feeders to spread salt.
Okay.
Huh.
So like things, you know what I mean? You put them on the back like of a truck and they,
Yeah, it's like a corn flinger, but using it for rock salt. Yeah.
So, but we survived. It's now just way too cold instead of way too cold and frozen.
Well, you know, one step at a time.
Exactly.
Yeah, it's warmed up here, but now it's flooding, so we've got that going for us.
Ugh. Dennis, any catastrophes with you?
Yeah, it sounds like I picked the perfect week to be on a cruise.
Oh, that's right. You did come back. Yeah.
So I was on a boat, and it was awesome. I climbed a waterfall. I swam with dolphins. I ate until I felt like I was going to pop.
Okay.
So it was the quintessential cruise experience.
Nice.
And a great time was had by all. The waterfall climbing thing was probably my favorite of everything we did. It was the Duns River Falls in Jamaica. And it's like hard enough to climb that, like, you know, it feels like more than a hike, right? Like it's actually something you got to focus on, but it's not so hard that you know, you're worried at any point. It's just really fun to climb up that. We took our older two, and it's just hilarious hearing them like yell and cheer about it. Cause I think in their minds, they were doing like the dramatic up a vertical climb waterfall type of deal.
Yeah.
They were really into it. So everyone had a blast.
Mm-hmm.
And then other than that, just ate a ton. favorite thing, Dark Horse. So normally I am not a tomato guy.
Okay.
I try them at regular intervals, and just have never been able to come around on them. Try them in many forms, have never been able to come around on them.
Is it a taste thing or a texture thing?
It's definitely the tomato snot. So it's partially texture. The taste has been like, it's either weak enough that it's like, why is it here? Or it's strong enough to where it's like, I don't know if I like this.
Okay.
So yeah, it's texture definitely factors in most heavily, I would say.
Mm-hmm. But what'd you find that broke that for you?
Y'all, they brought out a tomato tart. Which was a misnomer. It's a pizza. They brought out a pizza.
Right. I see. Yeah.
but it's, you know, it's like slices of whole tomato instead of a tomato sauce as the base.
Mm-hmm.
What was the cheese? I forget the name of the cheese off the top of my head right now. But then radishes, on top of it, of that, like shaved, radishes, mm-hmm. on top. And my life was changed. That was the only dish on the cruise that I ordered a second round of.
Okay.
So that's the clear winner. And anytime I saw radishes or tomatoes on the menu from then on out, I was like, oh, got to get that.
So, they know how to treat them here.
Changed my life. Yeah, it was awesome.
Cool. Well, I'm really happy you had a good time.
Yeah, I mean, 7 days and 80 degrees. To come back to everyone being like, it was terrible here. Everything was frozen. It's like... You guys are making my vacation that much better right now. Thank you.
Jeez. Yeah, two people on this very very show just talked about the miserable time that they had with the weather, and you rubbing that into their face.
No,
is a choice.
Your misery contributes to my joy, so please take heart.
Yeah. Okay. Cool. Well, we're happy to have you back.
Yeah.
I don't have much of anything. I just want to entreat the audience. If you exist in a world without neck pain, please appreciate that. Don't take it for granted. Yeah. My neck is acting up again. You know, I'm doing all the stuff to keep it better. You know, just icing it. And I've got a special wedge that I lay over. Okay, use a wedge. It's a triangle. I get in my wedge time.
Are you sure? Why not a three iron?
I mean,
hey,
golf jokes. Yeah, it's real. It sucks. I my hope is that I get to it before it turns into arm pain and numbness, like it did last time, because that actually got in the way of doing work. So yeah, that's what I'm dealing with, and it stopped me from getting into too much over the past week, but whatever. Who am I to complain?
I realize this is going to be like the most hippie thing ever. But if you look up this exercise called the 8 pieces of brocade that I've found works a lot, helps a lot with like upper back and neck pain, stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
So you might check that out and see if maybe that helps.
Okay. Yeah, no, I see some YouTube videos here. It's a Tai Chi thing.
Yeah, Qigong. Yep.
Yeah. Cool.
And yeah. Also, I sent you a link in the Slack for a cervical traction device that you can use for naps, short naps, using a thing to help fix your neck.
Yeah. Oh, that looks kind of similar to my wedge, except more structured.
Ah, yes. Okay.
Yeah. But I appreciate the advice and also knowing that I am not alone in this. Mm-hmm. So, yeah. Okay. Yeah.
That's because you were on a boat.
You were on a boat. Yeah. Life changing. Yeah. It's like the second she laid her hands on my neck, it transferred it to somebody else. Maybe somebody in my life. Yeah. Oh boy. It just all of it gone immediately. Yeah. I think we should talk about games. Yes. I think we have some video games to talk about. So let's do the regular kind of show with the grind, the multiplayer, and the end boss, and we can get started with
The Grind,
where we talk about the games we have been playing over the last period of time or so. Jala, since you've been gone the longest, I will throw it to you.
Okay, so I played a lot of different stuff. I played all of Dishonored 2. Well, this is a replay. I also replayed... I love Dishonored 2. It's great.
Yeah, no, it's a good
game. I actually haven't played Dishonored 2. I can only make snarky comments in good faith about one.
Okay. So anyway, I played Dishonored 2, and I played all of Dishonored Death of the Outsider. Both of those were lots of fun. It was interesting for me to see the stuff that, because the things that I remembered from those two games were very vivid. Like, I remembered the maps. I remembered the details of these things. And I haven't played these games, either one of them, in at least a decade now.
Yeah.
So, I memorized it because I spent so much time in those maps doing the Jala, which is exploring everything and poking around and seeing what I can get into. So, because like I've mentioned before, but when I play Dishonored, I will go through one way, but then I will backtrack through it, whatever other ways I can find, and explore everything I can get my hands on. So, and I will test the limits of where are the boundaries, where can I go, where will they let me get to? So,
yeah.
So, yeah, this time I didn't spend 500 million hours doing that. It was a lot faster because, number one, I know how to play Dishonored very well now because I played so many hours of it. But then also because, you know, I don't need to go through everything the way that I had been previous. So, yeah. In either case, I did those. There will be episodes on Dishonored coming up. The media episode for February will be on Dishonored 1 and kind of a general overview of Dishonored as a series. And then the second episode will come out in March, mid-March, and that one will be about Dishonored 2, Death of the Outsider, and then just kind of touching on some of the other stuff like the TTRPG, general lore stuff, things like that.
Yeah.
So, anyway, like, insofar as playing the games again, they're still solid. They still hold up. I still enjoyed playing them. I don't know that, like, I have, it's kind of hard because since I've already played them a lot, I don't feel like I need to go in depth on how they play and what they do and this, that, and the other, you know, so like...
You stab people good and sometimes teleport to stab people gooder.
Yeah, and sometimes not stab people. Yeah.
So, But anyway, so I played those. That was fun. Let's see.
I wish I remembered more about Death of the Outsider. I know that we did a WAF about it, and I know you play as Billy. But that's pretty much it. As far as what's the standout mission from that? Like in your experience from playing it?
Let me pull up the list of missions. So, I will say some of the missions in both Dishonored 2 and then Death of the Outsider, I would remember, like Dishonored 2, things like the Clockwork Mansion, for example. I don't remember the city leading up to the Clockwork Mansion, really, even though that's a really right. cool part. Like, I didn't remember it as much as I did mm-hmm. the Clockwork Mansion itself, because I spent way more time in there than I did in the city leading up to it, because I knew what was coming, right? Mm-hmm. So there's that kind of a thing. So I found that to be the case with a lot of what was going on in Dishonored 2. Let me see. What is this list of? So Death of the Outsider, one last fight. So Billy Lurk ends up finding out where Dowd is and going and get him. Also Follow the Ink. Oh, that one with the tattoo lady. I remember that. Oh, the bank job. That's like the biggest one from Death of the Outsider. That bank job one where you do the bank heist.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I remember dealing with there's a bunch of automatons in there. It's kind of like Jindosh Mansion 2.0.
Yeah. Except you can totally skip all of that too, but that's another story.
Yeah. Yeah, wait, so why are you robbing a bank? I do
there's
not
a
recall
whole, there's a,
you being
there's
short
a whole,
of money in any of these.
Oh, no. It's because there's something else that's being stored there in the depths of
the Is it your estranged bank? Wife that you're trying to win back?
No, not at all. But anyway, and then also the very last mission, A Hole in the World, that one with the weird golems and stuff.
I do remember that one,
Yeah, those two in particular, but actually I remember pretty much everything.
Golem, like the Jewish clay monster, not like the fish
correct.
Dude from Lord
right.
of the Rings.
Other Smeagol, yes.
Yeah.
So
Because there's five missions, and all of those were really I say all of them. The Stolen Archive, the fourth mission, just kind of falls out of my head. But the other ones I remembered actually pretty clearly for this. So
I just looking at screenshots, I remember doing this. I think just a lot of it blended in with base Dishonored 2 for me. So
And that's kind of the thing where it's like I would get confused with oh, really? Like when I was replaying Dishonored 2, I was like, that's that far into the game? Huh?
Oh, yeah. No, I mean, cracking the slab is basically the game's basically over when you do that.
I know. Yeah. And that's like a really good level. That's phenomenal level. So, Well, anyway. It was interesting going back and playing these. And then again, just kind of like the stuff that I remembered well, I remembered so well. And then other stuff, I was like, it took me a good chunk of the level before I'm like, oh, now I see something I recognize because I didn't remember anything about this particular one. Mm-hmm. So I played those. I also have sunk more time into Baldur's Gate 3. Everyone knows that game is a forever game. It's one of those that you're playing forever and ever and ever. So, I'm about 44 hours in or something. I'm still in Act 1, of course. I will probably continue to be in Act 1 for a while. I had the option to go on to the next act, but then there was more stuff to do. So what did Jella do? Jella went to go do
I have to imagine, though, 90% of players did that, though.
Yeah.
I mean, if you know anything about the Forgotten Realms, you're going to go to the Underdark.
Well, sure, but that, like, if you know anything about the Forgotten Realms, you're going to go to the Mountain Pass first until it doesn't look like you can get back, and then go to the Underdark because that's the way you actually want it to go. Like you gotta.
Yeah, but then you have to go back to the Mountain Pass anyway because you can't go through the Underdark.
Oh, darn.
Yeah. Any standout kind of moments for you in Baldur's Gate 3?
So far? Well, I had a fun thing happen where I was going to the Githyanki Creche, and then it stuck in like turn-based mode, and I didn't realize that I could turn that off in my menu yet because they had just updated it. And here, it gets better. Just wait. So that's happening. And so I was moving my little guys away from where that area is because I was like, nope, I'm going to back out of here. And then I backed out of there, and Karlak got across a bridge Nobody else could get across the bridge safely. So they just like ran around and I had them going around, but I didn't realize how far, like actually it's like so far to go around the other way.
But Carlac,
but Carlac got across there, got an animation, like a cutscene or something for something that was up there. And then it turned out to be right above where there's a goblin camp.
No.
And then, and then Carlac started just doing damage. Like eventually I got everybody back together.
Attacked the poor goblins.
Yeah, absolutely did. So yeah, but I am playing a paladin that's like Wrath of the Nature Ancients or whatever, like that the nature one where you have to protect critters and things. So like cannot abide the goblins because they abuse things.
I did the same thing just so you don't feel bad. I don't feel
bad. It's fine.
I love how goblins apparently aren't part of nature. They're apparently some sort of extraplanar being.
No, not that. It's because that they are doing some certain things to specific animals and things in the area, torturing them and such, that if you do not kill them, then you are going against your oath. You are oath-breaking, and then that causes a whole thing for a paladin.
Yeah, that's unfortunate.
Yeah, so either way, like I actually, because not all the goblins were like knew what was going on in all the different areas. I was nice and peaceful to them until I couldn't be anymore, because of stuff that happens in the story. But anyway, so that was fun because Carlac kind of just went in there and soloed a bunch of this until I could get everybody around. So that was fun. That's about the main highlight, I think, was just that whole point where they had made that update, but it had been so long since I had played last, I didn't know what was going on and that I could turn it off in my menu and everything. So, that's what I got.
Yeah. And you're playing it on Steam Deck too. So that's not necessarily the most discoverable. Yeah.
So anyway, I had to set that down because I have other stuff to do. And also I need to take breaks from it because it is very long.
Yeah.
So then I started a replay of Lunar the Silver Star on Sega CD. So this is Lunar 2 is one of my absolute favorite games. I love both Lunar games, but Lunar 2 in particular is my favorite of the two of them.
Mm-hmm.
And so the thing is that I sold my Sega CD very, very long time ago. And Sega CD emulation for the longest time was jank and was very hard to do. So I have not played the Sega CD version of this game in forever. It's been 20 years at least. Mm-hmm. And it's very funny because when I was talking to folks about it, because I will be covering it on Jalachan's Place later in the year, I was talking about it to some folks and I was Googling around just to see how they could possibly get a hold of it, you know, like emulate it and everything. And then come to find out there's a retrogames.cc, I think it is, has it. So you can play it in your browser. I'm now playing it in my browser. They also have some arcade games and stuff, including Bubble Symphony, which is a Bubble Bobble arcade game that's like a multiplayer, like a four-player Bubble Bobble branching path game, which is very cute and fun.
Okay.
And they also have a bunch of NES and Genesis and a bunch of other stuff. So definitely go look for that. Very cool. But anyway, so I've been playing it in my browser, and you know, now that I can play that, guess what they also have? They have Shining Force CD, that game that I told you all about
times. You love and have not been able to play?
No, it's not that I love it. I never got to play it because once upon a time, I had the Sega CD, and I went to the Toys R Us, and I tried to buy it. It was the last copy. I was so excited. I was going home. And while my mom was driving me home, I opened up the box and I tried to take the CD out and the CD snapped in half.
Okay, takes a lot of strength to snap a CD in half. They are way less brittle than you would expect. I don't know what was going on. Mini Jala was a beast even then, is what I'm hearing.
Well, so the CD totally snapped in half, and we didn't even get all the way home, and the game was totally broken. So we take it back to the Toys R Us, and they're like, this is the last copy. None of the other stores in the area have it, and this is before internet or anything like that. You couldn't get it somewhere. And so I was brokenhearted, and I never got to play it. Mm-hmm. So now I have the option of playing it in my browser at my convenience. Yeah. So that's very badass.
Nice.
So in Lunar Silver Star, I will say several different things. One, I'm over halfway through with my replay. Two, I remember everything. Mm-hmm. I remember everything in this game. It's been 20 years, but because I played it so much when I was younger, I can still remember like so much of even just the NPCs that you find in town. Like I know what all of them say because I've read it so many times. So I memorized the maps. I memorized everything. So it's been fun to replay it and just to see how much I retain in my brain from this. Uh-huh. But also there's some things that I've been picking up on that I didn't catch when I was younger because I didn't know enough at that time to get it. About Japanese in particular. So, like, there's a couple of things. One, Master Mel, one of the four heroes, he created the town of Meribia, okay? Well, Meribia, okay, R's and L's in Japan are the same. So what he did is he called it Melibia. He called it Melibia. He called it after himself.
Oh, okay.
So that's a thing that I didn't realize before, but then when I was replaying it, I'm like, that's hilarious, actually. It is.
Wow, welcome to Coal Town.
That's a choice. So, that happened. And then, too, like, there's some other things where they're making a few little jokes, and I was like, I don't understand why this is funny. And then I'm like, oh, I get it now. I get it now because of my knowledge of Japanese. And then, too, like, there's even some in-jokes where the devs put something like in the Library of Vain, when you go through and you're reading all the books on the bookshelves, one of the books says, like, a cure for migraine is, like, put a pickled plum to each of your temples and then say, Gaijin something, something, something. And I didn't know what it was at the time. Okay. But basically, it's something like bad-tempered Gaijin or something like that. And it's just Victor Ireland basically making a joke for the translators and anybody else who happens to know some Japanese.
Right.
And it's funny because I didn't know what that was because when I first played this, I was like 13. I didn't know Japanese at that time.
It just looks like, this is magical language.
Yeah. So it's been fun replaying it for that reason. And I'm obviously going to be going on from that to replaying the PlayStation 1 remake and then, of course, going to Lunar 2. So you're going to be hearing more and more about that over time.
so you'll play the PlayStation 1 remake and get the working designs translation, which takes all of that like intercultural nuance and replaces it with Monica Lewinsky jokes, I think.
Well, here's the thing, though, is that I do also have the original Japanese versions of the remakes on the Sega Saturn. I have those as well.
Yeah.
So, but the thing is that the text in the original Japanese is so serious. Like, it's nothing like the goofiness of the working designs thing. And, like, because I grew up with the working designs one, it's kind of weird to backtrack into the game, but with, like, a super serious tone. It's kind of hard to do. Like, when I did get them, when the Sega Saturn, you know, was extant and I had copies of those, I still have them, but, I haven't dug it out in a while. But when I was playing them in Japanese, I'm like, wow, this is a very different experience. I mean, like, there's moments of levity, but it's nothing like, the working designs version. But it has its own charm. It's not for everybody. It's definitely some of the stuff has aged a lot worse than other parts of it. But yeah, it's been fun to revisit this. So
nice. Well, it's cool that is accessible to you now. Yeah. Sega CD emulation, it's real finicky and real dependent on there being good ISOs and also like there's overhead and getting like BIOS set up for them. and sourcing the BIOS for the Sega CD, depending on the region you're trying to play, is always so difficult. So it's neat that there's like a turnkey solution for you there.
Yeah, yeah. And like I said, that place has so many other games available. It's totally worth taking a look at it.
Yeah.
So, but yeah. And then the very last thing that I have been playing is Palworld. I played a little bit of Palworld.
You have to say it very quietly or else the discourse will find us.
Well, we'll discuss till we get to me. We will discuss it a little bit, but that's also, I already told you in Green Room, but that's also going to be part of my story, is just discussing the discourse around this game.
The proper term is counter-discourse, please.
So without having massive knowledge of what was going on with all of the drama around Palworld, I picked it up because I had seen it when, you know, it had dropped somewhere. I read something about it a long time ago and I was like, oh, okay, well, I'll take a look at it when it comes out. And then I found it, oh, hey, it's out, and people I knew were playing. So I was like, okay, picked it up and started playing it. Well, the thing is that as much as, you know, I was like, oh, well, people keep on comparing this to Pokemon. Maybe this will be like, you know, something kind of like Pokemon that'll do the thing that I want Pokemon to do, which is be more challenging. The problem is that it turns out that it's like a mishmash of Breath of the Wild along with Monster Hunter and Pokemon. But it's like a base build. The main thing that it is you have a base builder. You have to build a place that you have to defend. You have your little critters. You have like a hunger meter and all this other stuff. And it's just like, when I started, I spent like over an hour in it. And I'm just like, you know, this is a time sink for number one. And number two, really is not, it's not meant for single player. It's meant for being online. But then also, you know, every asshole out on the internet is going to come and wreck your base. And every time you come log back into the game, your stuff's going to be gone.
So you've got to find your people and then pay for a dedicated server. It's it's Ark Survival Evolved, but with Pokemon.
Okay, I was going to ask if it was Rust. All sounds very similar.
Yeah.
See, does it actually have that? Because I haven't seen any indication of that.
It's an early access, so I have no idea.
Does it actually have what? I'm sorry.
Rating?
So it looks. I haven't seen any like mention of dedicated servers or like any sort of Rust things
I'm looking at it from the side of Ark. I don't know about dedicated server kind of stuff.
Yeah,
Jala's point stands is just like, you either, you know, have dedicated people you play with all the time, or you let randos in and it becomes a fucking nightmare.
Yeah. So overall, the kind of takeaway there is, this is not my type of game. So, you know, I was like, okay. And so I played a little bit over an hour and then I promptly closed it and then sent a message to Steam requesting a refund. I have been refunded my money. So, and then after that, I found out about all the other back and forth about everything having to do with this game, because they used all this, you know, AI stuff, generative AI. Yeah. Trained on Pokemon to make all of this stuff. So
to be fair, there's currently no evidence they've actually done.
Yeah, I was going to ask if there is something new, because I tapped out of the discourse online a couple days ago because it was getting annoying on that.
Yeah.
So, the studio founder and like the lead person has expressed they're very pro AI in terms of you know, specifically generative AI in terms of stuff, and also big in NFT kind of shit. So
in particular, the founder has said like AI would be a great way to get around copyright.
Yes.
So like not just pro generative AI, but like pro generative AI to do illegal things without getting caught.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know.
Well, so there's so much more to this. I don't know about like if there's any particular evidence that has been levied so far. However, so people have been going back and forth about this for various reasons. So I was surprised that Nintendo didn't nerf this, because I was surprised it actually came out, because when I saw it in development, I was like, Nintendo's going to nerf that. And they didn't. They didn't kill it. But so one thing I do want to say is that a modder made a Pokemon mod to stick Pokemon critters and Ash Ketchum into this game and then promptly got slapped you know, serve the papers by Nintendo. So,
the modder's message about that, it was just Nintendo came for me.
Yeah.
That's, you know, it's the equivalent of like punching the guy next to the toughest guy in jail.
Yeah. Well, and here's the thing.
He just found, like, he woke up and there was a, I know, I was trying to think, like, a Yoshi with its head cut off. Sorry, I was trying to do a bit, and I couldn't quite land it.
Well, so the thing is that somebody from my server, Threnza, I will mention, Threnza had said, like, actually, you know, Nintendo did a good by waiting until Palworld made all of this money to serve papers to start in on this, you know, because there's money to be had now, you know, and versus also, before. But
that increases damages as well.
Yeah, it does. Yeah. It does. Yeah. But so anyway, some people are going back and forth about it because, of course, this company uses AI. There are people who say that all of their other prior games were also basically, you know, rips off of other Nintendo properties and stuff like that. Yeah. And that they are just kind of like constantly trying to mimic what Nintendo is doing to get money. Also,
not
I read
to be fair, Nintendo
about,
is
like,
doing it to get money as well.
Yes. But anyway, also, like, some folks were talking about how, like, this is the first game where they actually had to make their own models and didn't buy them from somewhere in some of them and things like that. So, like, these developers rely on, like, outside sourcing for so much of their stuff that, like, they're not making their games. But again, since this guy, you know, the head of this company is really big into AI and things like that, that tracks. You know,
the most suspicious thing that I have seen, you know, just to, and we're recording this on January the 23rd, just in case anybody is like, hey, something new's come out. The linearity of time, please don't. People have been comparing the meshes of the models of various pals to Pokemon. And seeing a lot of it being the same geometry, like down to polygons, a little bit more than seems like it would be, accidental, let's say. And, you know, lest anybody think that we're rushing to defend the Pokemon Company or Nintendo, Game Freak, any of these, if they're doing it to a big company, they can also do it to a small company. And they have, one of their games that is currently in development, is very similar. I would say a fast follow, to Hollow Knight. I've seen comparisons, on that, and also something.
A really poor game to choose to copy, though, because, like, that's something that
a tremendous amount of art and labor went into.
Yeah.
Well, and, like, what makes it good is the details, you know?
Yes. Like, yeah. So, you know, it's not just like, hey, we're defending Nintendo. I see the argument that, like, there are a lot of Pokemon fans who are discontent and they wanted something better than what Nintendo was giving them. And the idea of just like, hey, these Pokemon have guns and maybe smoke weed and swear
I don't
sometimes.
Really heard about the guns.
I don't know about those last two.
Oh my god, I gotta check out this game.
Yeah. So, go ahead.
I do have some other things I want to say. Please,
you do. I'm so sorry. I wanted to get in because it sounded like we were caping for Nintendo at this point.
No, I was trying to get to the other stuff.
Okay, continue. Sorry.
Okay, so there's no hand raise button like there is in Zencastr. I can't raise my hand nicely. Okay. One of the important things that there is to say about everything that's going on with Pocket Pair versus this whole Nintendo thing is because having the whole AI question come up in this situation, you know, forced against Nintendo, which is a big player that can afford to do litigation or whatever, is important because this will be like a landmark case in terms of like how we go forward with using AI tools. Mm-hmm. When it comes to creating these creative works of whatever fashion or form. Yeah. So, you know, like there is a little bit more that is at stake here. It's kind of like with the whole SAG-AFTRA strike and like the stuff that they're in the middle of negotiating about the use of AI in movie making and things as well. All of that stuff right now is super important because this is just, you know, it's going to set the tone for where we go with AI and how we use it going forward and what is considered legal.
Yeah.
So that's why it's of the most importance.
100%. And also, you know, this is it, like, I think it is worth talking about this, at least right now, because it is incredibly popular. It is something that, you know, it's been breaking records on Steam. And, you know, that is, you know, that I think that is something that is worth kind of examining. Like, what are the appetites here that, you know, that people have? How did this break through? What is this addressing that people that people want to see? And how can it be better addressed?
So elsewhere? Is this like independent Steam stats validating interest? Because my first thought when I saw, you know, all they put up the players like, oh, 5 million players in 3 days or whatever, was this was day and date on Game Pass, right? And I have to imagine, it's on Game Pass. So I have to imagine there is some stat padding going on by generously, if not misleadingly, counting, you know, people who just have access through Game Pass.
I don't have a reason to believe that. Just because like I've seen like, you know, screenshots of like the Steam, you know, most concurrent played whatever the stuff that I've seen has always been related just to Steam. Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. I feel like one thing I think a lot of the discourse is kind of missing is why people are interested with it, which I think a lot of it is just Pokemon with guns is kind of an idea that justifies itself.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of low-hanging fruit to, let's say, at a surface level, make it more mature, you know, quote-unquote, age it up for an audience that has had to kind of suffice with, you know, games that were originally made for kids and have continued to be made for kids. Right. So there's that. I mean, Jolly, you laid it out at the start. You know, you were interested in this because you wanted something that was like a little bit more involved than the base Pokemon experience that you were getting. Right.
Well, yeah. Like for me, I've said before when I was playing Pokemon Sword and Shield and when I was playing Pokemon Scarlet Violet, that a large part of what frustrates me with Pokemon is like the idea, the general mechanics and stuff are all really great, but like they suffer the problem of having like mechanics bloat. They keep on pulling forward everything from every game they ever did and putting it into every game. And so like, there's just a bunch of systems you don't actually need to engage with. They're there to tweak with if you want to, but like you don't need to in order to play the game and to play it, you know, to a very high degree of play. So like it's useless. It's not even serving a function. And then like also you can't make the game really harder or anything like that. There's not a difficulty scale or anything like that that makes it more involved or anything like that. And of course the story is not what anybody is in a Pokemon game for. There's never any kind of interesting story.
No, so, you're there to thirst, you know, over the trainer models, duh. And also some of the Pokemon.
Yeah, I was saying, also the Gardevoir.
Yeah, everybody for some reason just on the net, that's just everywhere. But there's that. And then like, I'm kind of curious what if any change Nintendo will make it going forward, having the experience of now having to get into a whole bunch of litigation with Pocket Pair over this PAL World game. Like, is that going to influence Pokemon at all, or are they just going to double down and do same old? I have no idea. I mean, like they did do Arceus or Arceus, however you want to say that.
Yeah.
And that's a little bit different, but
yeah, I mean, and that was like a trial balloon for some features that ultimately made their way into what is it? Sapphire or not Sapphire. Well, Scarlet Violet, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. The open world, you know, kind of thing. The argument that I've seen most often, and what people, the one time I tweeted about this, what people brought into my mentions and I had to mute it, basically boils down to, I am mad at Pokemon, therefore I don't care if this if this company rips them off, I'm going to support them because I'm out of Pokemon, which is a child's logic.
Yeah.
Like that's not how this that's not how any of this any of this works. You make your statement against Pokemon by not buying the game.
I'm not going to accomplish anything. Like no one gives a shit about that.
Right. Yeah. So
well, and then too, circling back though to how AI implementation is going to be going forward, it's important that Nintendo is now fighting this fight against Pocket Pair, because the company that made Hollow Knight is not going to be able to fight that fight. They don't have the funds to do that kind of thing. So
I mean, Team Cherry doesn't exist anymore. Silk Song is just a dream we all had. Yeah.
I mean, the only thing is though, I don't know. I'm not sure. I don't see this necessarily being a case for AI. Like, this looks, at least to me, like a lot more like regular copying.
Yeah. To say that AI alone could do this is actually like wildly overblowing what AI is capable of.
Yeah.
AI as part of the like remixing of these, you know, kind of design elements, right?
Oh yeah, I mean, if they did use AI, then definitely. I'm just saying, like, yeah, I think there's a really good chance that this was just a lot of it. It looks like they either took existing Pokemon and made minor tweaks, or took parts from different Pokemon and Frankenstein them together.
There's a total of 37 ish, let's just say, designs of PALs that look fairly similar to Pokemon.
Yeah.
But the company itself,
which is funny because it's only about 37 PALs.
Well, the Pocket Pair company swears that they use generative AI to create.
Oh, they have said they've used that. Okay.
That was my understanding.
I may be wrong. This gets into if that AI was trained unethically or illegally, whatever, on Pokemon, then that's where the big question and court battle lies.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Has Nintendo taken any official action on this, or is it just they did a CND on the mod?
I think it's just on the mod right at this point. So, and then I just Googled it, and they say, okay, people are saying that it is using generative AI. The words are bandied about, but there isn't evidence of it yet.
Yeah.
But of course, if they're going to be doing like an actual investigation, I guess we'll find out as it goes.
Yeah. Even if it turns out that there is, you know, no specific use of generative AI in this, you know, and it is just garden variety plagiarism or whatever, it's like, it can still be sus, and it can still be like a very crass and uninspired product.
You don't have to be the worst version of this, like, for me to think that you are not good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, I mean, like, and the studio Pocket Pair has come out and said that they've gotten death threats about this. Obviously, that's not cool. I'm not coming out in their defense, you know, in Pocket Pair's defense. It's just like, hey, this has gotten extreme. This also has all of the hallmarks of becoming kind of a like a proxy culture war battle a little bit.
Yeah,
with vaguely reactionary pro AI forces, you know, rallying behind this kind of in a lower stakes version of what happened last year with Hogwarts Legacy and transphobes rallying behind that.
So people, please be creative and funny and insulting them. Do not send them death threats.
Well, about the death threats too, the way that like, I did actually read the tweet where I think their community manager or whatever his title is, had said something and was like, oh, I'm working very diligently to respond to everything, but you'll please forgive me for not answering the death threats. And that's like how it dropped, that they had death threats. And like, the way that the wording came across is just kind of like, you know, kind of jokey, and like it just makes me feel like they might just be putting up a smoke screen to be like, hey, look, we got death threats, which is not cool. So if you aren't with us, Pocket Pair,
then you're with the death threats.
You are with the death threat people, and that's bad. And like trying to throw up a smoke screen to just, you know, and that might not be the case, but that's just how it read to me. And it's, you know, I don't know if it's from a place of good faith, you know, especially with the way they presented it.
Yeah.
So I mean, we'll see, I guess.
It's following such a script. Like, it is, like, locked in a little bit. Like, you know, the discourse around it has locked into these very predictable, things down to, like, the people who are for it, like using the same language.
Is all this discourse being people generated by AI?
No.
Maybe.
Yes.
I mean, some of it, I've got no idea, but like, it's just, there's a template for this kind of fight to happen, you know, and it's just kind of like locked into it. And yeah, I don't know. I think that it's, to me, it's important to say at the end of the day, this also just doesn't look like a very good or fun game to me.
Yeah.
And also does not seem to meaningfully engage with, if anything, all that this does is, you know, like give people something that looks kind of like Pokemon that they can play on their PC, which, you know, is a need that Nintendo doesn't, you know, doesn't meet, because, you know, they're Nintendo. They're not going to make stuff for PC, but maybe they ought to think about
it. I want
doing
to
that.
Do an internet equivalent of changing the channel. The problem is that all the channels are driven by algorithms that have decided I need to see this. And it's like, well, I can't change the channel. Up. I got to turn off the TV, I guess.
And here we are doing it. I, you know, and I'm really happy, Jello, that you played it and had the reaction that you did. Not just because it's a similar reaction to what I had when I found out what this actually was.
Well,
but because
my response to the game itself was all before I knew about any of the discourse. So like that's also kind of important, because that means it's not colored by that discourse, because I didn't. It's not for me. I don't know. Like, it was fine, I guess, but like, it just didn't capture my attention the way that I was hoping it might. So,
Yeah.
Anyway, let's move on. Somebody else talk about games.
Yeah. Moxie, it sounded like you had something related to that.
The only thing I really have is Power World. So I played about 6 hours of it. And I don't know. It's interesting. You know, it's mostly just a open world Pokemon game. I think it's actually not that base building oriented. Like, you have to have a base for crafting, and you stick your pals there doing work, but I've basically just just kind of built whatever I needed, and then tried to have each of the different species have different tasks they can do. So, for example, a lot of your equipment is run by water wheels, and so you have to have, you know, water type Pokepals. And, you know, for cooking and, like, I don't know, smelting or something, you need fire, you know, stuff like that.
So it's basically Flintstones. Each of these things
exactly.
You're using that there. When you say, oh, it's just like an open world Pokemon game, do you mean like it's an open world game that happens to have Pokemon in it?
Yeah, pretty much.
Because like are you ordering them to fight for you, or are you going around with your guns hunting down other players? Are you hunting down the pals?
Couple of things on that. One of the interesting things, and one of the things that I think it does legitimately do over like a Pokemon that's interesting, is, you know, you're actually fighting on your own. With your pals, and it definitely is a different experience where, like, the way you get, your first pal is like run up to like, I don't know, an adorable sheep or cat creature or something, beat it with a stick, and then throw a Pokeball at it.
Oh no.
Uh, So, okay. I mean, that is definitely a different experience. Now that I've actually caught a number of POWs, you can actually use them in combat. And they mostly attack on their own. Which actually can be a little bit of an issue because, you know, since you're doing the Pokemon thing of, like, try to get a, them to low health so you can, chuck a Pokeball. They don't have any AI to, like, stop attacking once the enemy's at low health.
Can you recall them,
but still it's, a little bit janky. The one thing I think that actually is kind of a cool feature is a number of the POWs have gear you can attach to them. Or you can craft and attach to them that gives them special abilities. A lot of it is just like, hey, you can ride on this POW and like get around quicker. However, one of my favorite is the first fire type you get is like this fox creature. And the equipment for it is just kind of this harnel with handles on the back. And so once you have that, you can go over and press F and just pick it up and use it as a flamethrower, which is kind of entertaining.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's spoof right. stuff.
I will say my biggest complaint, and this gets on to your question, is there actually aren't that many guns in the game. I'm six hours in and I've not gotten a gun. I'm still poking people with pointy sticks.
So I mean, I think this gets around to maybe one of Jala's kind of complaints about this, which is you're just kind of like, it sounds like you are dumped onto this island with basically nothing to do except just establish yourself and set up a machine so you can go out and kind of get more of these things. Like more so than just being about like base building or whatever, kind of the lack of direction or the lack of like an actual campaign around this.
Yeah.
Seems to be something that is a sticking point, especially if somebody came to it expecting this to be, a modern or, an up-aged Pokemon game.
So I do think it's important to consider, to the degree this game deserves, consideration, that this is early access, and like it's pretty common for a game to be released to early access just with the gameplay, but not with the storyline. That being said, as far as I can tell, the story appears to be that like on the horizon, there's a giant Erd tree. And apparently you need to get to that. So that tends to be the, to the degree that there is an objective, that appears to be it.
So they're just speedrunning the number of things they can rip off.
Yeah, but I mean, like even above and beyond, just like this is like an end game goal or something like that. A lack of a campaign, and these are towns you go to, and some kind of structure. Like there's just a bunch of stuff that like this is hewing more towards a genre that is more popular on PC. While also advertising itself as being a stand-in or a substitute for something that it decided is not outside of borrowing some cosmetic.
This is also very savvy, iterative design or what you want to say, where like throw a bunch of spaghetti at the wall, and the stuff that people like the most is what you spend the time developing, and the other stuff you can just kind of forget about, pretend it never happened.
I mean, and that's not necessarily. Yeah. So, a bad thing, as long as some of the stuff you're throwing is unique stuff that you didn't rip off.
Yeah, well, it's
Jala, it sounded like you were gonna say something.
I did want to say I forgot to mention that I was playing on my Steam Deck, and you cannot use any keyboard inputs on Steam Deck. It's not verified for Steam Deck. It's just playable. So some of the controls are also kind of jank. So in the hour plus that I played of it, I didn't get, like, I got barely the beginning of a base built, and that's about as far as I got with much of anything. And then, like, all the controls are kind of weird on Steam Deck, at least it was for me. So, and you cannot, again, use a keyboard. So if you are playing multiplayer, you can't type to anybody. You can't change your name. You can't do any of that. So,
I think the other thing is there's actually a whole separate controversy that we haven't really touched on. And that is that the game is kind of edgelordy.
I was waiting for you to mention that.
In that it's very explicit that there is, I won't say you're necessarily forced to do this, but there is significant support for you running your base as pretty explicitly as like a sweatshop.
Yeah, and like you see this in images. Like there's an image like that they're using to advertise it, which is what looks like a bunch of Eevees, very glumly walking on treadmills, possibly to generate power.
There's stuff like that. All of your characters have like a all of the pals have a sanity meter, and as which is more or less a combination of like fatigue and kind of a depression type of mechanic. So, you know, if they don't have beds, it's going to drop. If you don't build, like, you have to build like hot springs for them to relax in, that sort of thing. And if you don't, they'll have kind of RimWorld style breaks where, you know, they'll just, like, decide to stop work and refuse to work and stuff like that, or they can get injured. I haven't seen it be real explicit, but I've heard some things that apparently some of it is that's coded as, like, industrial accidents type of injuries. They also can apparently develop ulcers. There's, like, some unlock that allows you to straight up set like are you just having these guys work, or are you straight up like working to them to the bone, I don't know if it's adjust the hours or whatever, but it seems like there is explicit support for being a bad boss. There is explicit support for like butchering the pals for resources, which is somewhat supported by the main way you get experience to level up, which is how you unlock new things to build, is you're encouraged to catch multiples of each pal. In particular, the first 10 you capture of a given type, you get a XP bonus, and and all of them have, all of the pals have various positive and negative, traits, random traits. And so you're kind of, it seems like encouraged to just catch everything you see and just butcher the ones that aren't useful. Which, I mean, granted, is something that technically exists in Pokemon, but is not kind of fronted.
Yeah, you turn them into candy. You turn them into candy. I would have to see the way that the way that it's expressed. Basically, it sounds like this is operating at the level of like a Newgrounds, kind of thing, where it's like, what if it was Pokemon, but we actually made it into like a cock fight or a dog fight, which is tasteless, but also, my primary thing is like the labor concern, I guess, is if I'm ranking these things, not to say that like the tone can't be just kind of off putting and shitty.
I would say the last thing is you can also enslave humans.
What? Okay, yeah, buried the lead a bit there.
Yeah. So the other effectively like trainers and stuff, one, they all get guns, which is completely unfair, but,
okay,
you can straight up.
See, like, I was told if everyone has guns, you can't enslave people.
Yeah, turns out that giant electric beasts tread wherever they want. I will say they chose, in my opinion, the funniest way to implement it, which is that it works just like the POWs. You when someone's damaged, you can throw a Pokeball at them and capture them. But yeah, and then you can, you know, force them to work in your factories.
That's horrifying.
Okay.
So yes. So yeah. There's a lot of stuff going on.
This feels like that Atomica game, just, you know, for a different genre. What was the Atomic Heart? Just for Pokemon.
I have seen some people argue that, you know, all of these things, all of these horrible things, are things that definitely exist and are part of the Pokemon universe. It just isn't, like, you know, mentioned. But I feel like, to me, the difference between, like, I don't know, making, like, a Watchmen or something like that, is that, like, in the real world, hero worship and worship of militarism and stuff like that is like a major social problem. So there actually is a discussion of like, should we do this? Like, there might be artistic value in people showing the ramifications. However, there's not really a societal discussion of like, is dogfighting okay? Like, I don't think anyone's playing Pokemon and being like, oh yeah, this would, like, in real life with animals getting hurt, be cool. Like, it's sort of like in the same way that Monster Hunter is not pro hunting.
Right. It's I don't know, but like, but before I would start hand wringing about like the morality of it, I just want to say like, it's not making a like a good or funny point.
Exactly.
Like, and humor can be objective, but like, this sounds about as incisive as a fucking butter knife to me. Like that just it just feels, I don't know, just kind of like lazy. It's like for like first order observations about the absurdity of Pokemon.
Exactly. Yeah.
You know, when, you know, I think the thing about Pokemon that I've come around to is having all of these wonderful creatures, and the only thing we can do with them is make them fight. Like, that's the least interesting thing you can do with them.
I mean,
actually,
I will say, you know? I still want them to make a Pokemon game set in the war that apparently canonically happened in the past.
Oh, the war?
Yeah.
It's funny, Cole, when you say that, you can actually use Pokemon for more interesting things in Power World, it sounds like, with them powering your base. But they're doing it in a way, but it's
labor.
Like, oh, this energy Pokemon is pushing a wheel just like a human could. So even though they kind of ass backwards stumbled near it, they still completely missed it.
And it's, I don't know, it kind of seems like you could ask for better. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't know, this seems like very, very weak suit.
Yeah, no, I definitely think that. The last thing I'd say, and this is a super minor thing that might be reading into some things, but something that to me felt like, I don't know, like, are you intentionally picking the, like, worst foot forward on literally every option, is, like, your things to, while your things to, like, get, like, eggs from a chicken Pokemon or wool from a sheep Pokemon is called a ranch, which is pretty neutral. All of your farming stuff are referred to as plantations.
Oh,
which,
good lord.
Which, granted, like, is a correct term for that, but it does feel like you maybe just kind of chose like the Yeah,
farm. Yeah. You call it. That's No, that I mean, man, that that fucking sucks. Is this an American
Japanese
studio?
I believe
Japanese,
which means Nintendo can really come after them.
Oh, all right.
Yeah. Yeah. Maybe that should be corrected. I don't care for that.
Should it be? Yes. Will it be? Trend says no.
Yeah, it's.
No.
Yeah, I would say it's. I don't think it's nearly as bad of a game as some people have said, and I think I have heard some legitimate, like some people who like the gameplay that I think have some legitimate points in that. They like the fact that, like, to a significant degree, the way your Pokemon, you make your Pokemon battle is either A, you attack a thing and they attack wherever you're attacking, or you just pick up your Pokemon and throw it at wherever you want to attack. And I've seen some people that are like, I want to like Pokemon, but I don't like dealing with all the overhead of the RPG stuff and stuff like that. And I like a game that just, you know, skips straight to, like, make it shoot fireballs. And so, like, I think there's some legitimacy to that. However, I will say, overall, I don't think it's that great of a... I don't think it's as good of a game as... what would normally justify like 10 bazillion concurrent players or whatever. So I'm interested to see. I feel like unless they should happen to like make a lot of money from this and like decide to keep developing it and, you know, turn it into a great game out after all, I feel like long term, the biggest news item around this is going to be like if they get sued or not.
But. You know, that'll definitely have the you know, the farthest reaching implications. This game is going to disappear from the conversation. I mean, who knows? People will definitely think that it's old by the time this episode comes out. But like, you know, it will have made its splash, and then it will it won't be in headlines or whatever, unless the court case goes through. I hope that it breaks in a positive way for all the reasons Jala laid out for why this, you know, the different things that this connects to.
My hope is that I don't know if does Japan have like cameras in their courtrooms or whatever, because I want to be able to watch the fireworks. That's what I want from this.
Yeah, I don't know. Also, I know nothing about the Japanese court system outside of specific facts from Phoenix Wright.
I was going to say Phoenix Wright.
Rampooning. Yeah, yeah. Like, you know, just like that game is it's a satire. So I've got nothing. So I've got no idea, even what the grounds are.
Yeah.
So,
yeah. I mean, I'm assuming that in real life, there are not nearly as many ninjas or cyborgs as in Phoenix, right? Although it being Japan, you never know.
It's, even like down to just, like what the actual, grounds or basis or standing would be. And you know, in terms of like burden of proof around this, no clue. I plead ignorance.
You know, depending on your definition, there are a lot of cyborgs out there.
That is true.
Yeah, I wear eyeglasses. That's true. Yeah. Anything more about Power World?
Nope.
No.
Okay. And was that all you had?
That's all I've had. That's interesting. I've been doing. Final Fantasy Online, but have just been power leveling my trade skills, which isn't the most interesting thing in the world, so.
Yeah. That's fine. Cool. Well, Dennis,
yeah, I got a lot of new stuff, just because I was in a new environment, right? So I took my Steam Deck on the cruise and use that as an excuse to pick up or re-download a bunch of games that I'd never really gotten into and wanted to. I'll start with the one that we talked about at the end of the last episode I was on. It was your end boss, Cole. I picked up Grime. Yes.
Oh, cool. Yeah.
I absolutely love it. It is the perfect game for the Steam Deck. And, you know, obviously it's a Souls-like 2D. You are this kind of rock dude with a black hole as a head? Question mark? And you're you know, doing the Dark Souls thing, exploring the world until you find a boss and then beating your head against the boss. And honestly, I think the thing that stood out to me the most as I've gotten into it is how well it does that expansion and contraction gameplay loop. You know, that is in pretty much all the Dark Souls or Souls likes that you're gonna play. But this one, I don't know, it just feels really well tuned. And the number of times it's like, okay, I think I'm about ready to leave this area, so I'll just clean out that one hallway I didn't get to before. And then 5 hours later, you're like, wait, how did I get here again? Where is this? But then things get really small because you've, you know, you explore, and then you find this, you know, cool, intriguing boss. And it is that boss and the run up to that boss, which so far in this game, that all the run ups have been, very mercifully short. And so it just contracts down to this very focused fight where you're learning the patterns, et cetera. And yeah, that kind of yin and yang, is performed very well in Grime.
So for people who don't listen to Bonfires at Chat, just the idea that the level feels really big the first time that you are pushing out into it, you know, like, oh my gosh, I'm never going to get through this. I'm fighting for every single inch. But as you gain the mastery, the space kind of compresses and contracts as you get through it faster and just know it better. Just, you know, what we say is, you know, knowledge compresses space. Yeah. Right.
And even, I mean, it just feels when you're exploring, like every hallway leads to three more hallways. A hallway, not in the sense of that it's drab, just every direction you could go keeps on splitting. And then, yeah, at the end of it, it all fits together very coherently. But it feels so big that first time through. So yeah, Grime is, you know, aced that side of the Souls-like genre. I'm loving the design and just particularly the willingness to be ugly. And like, if anything is going to be truly ugly, it needs to be a little bit cute.
The little rock dudes.
Well, yeah. Everything in that game, like, you know, the flower maidens, the mamas, just every single enemy is, I think, the pinnacle of that principle that, like, this is hideous, this is ugly and weird, and it's a little bit cute. That just also sends it, you know, to another level. So amazing visual design and really fun. Everything, you know, it starts out, like you said, little rock dudes, and, you know, everything is made of rock at the start. And like the further you progress in the game, the more biological it gets. And watching that kind of visual conversation is really interesting, and, you know, it plays into the themes of the game and all that, but they tell that story visually really, really well.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. And what ultimately, I'm very excited for you to see. Can't what they're
wait.
Doing.
Yeah. And just, the, you know, the storytelling through items and descriptions and kind of vague references is done well, to where, like, you I feel like in this form of storytelling, you kind of get what's going on the subconscious level before you understand it on a conscious level, if it ever gets there.
Yeah.
Maybe that's vibes. Am I describing vibes, you guys? The vibes are great.
I mean, at least preliminary vibes before things are, you know.
Yeah. That depends. Have you had any edibles?
No, not tonight.
Okay. No, then you're not describing vibes.
Okay, fair. So yeah, the weapon that I've kind of latched onto is the needle.
Okay, so you're doing like the fast, like,
well, that, no, the needle is very big and slow. It's a dex weapon.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
So yeah, it does scale off of dex primarily. But it's like, you know, a needle that is twice as tall as you are. That you kind of lumber around gotcha. With. And so, you know, you're stabbing, I guess technically you're right, it is kind of, you're using it like a rapier, but it does not swing quickly, which is interesting, you know, to mm-hmm. have a dex weapon that requires the care of a great club or what have you. But it yeah. does create that interesting situation where I'm very focused on dex, but also these kind of, you know, one hit and retreat kind of deals. I love the parry system in this game, and this is coming from someone mm-hmm. who has never been the parry player. I've right. never gotten parry and riposte. It's never clicked for me. I'm always like, just give me the giant two-handed something or other and I'll figure it out. Yeah.
It's different in a 2D game compared to a 3D game. Because they're allowed to, just the signaling is different, and the fact that you're always looking mm-hmm. at the thing and, you know, and being able to read the animation, it helps also that the animation in Grime mm-hmm. is phenomenal.
It is. And, yeah. And I think this is where I don't play enough of them to say with confidence, but I think the parry window in this is extremely forgiving. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, that also helps. Yeah.
But they, you know, they factor into like parries are how you charge your Estus flask. And mm-hmm. you know, parries are how you can, you don't have to follow it up with a backstab to have it take a big chunk of health in a lot of situations. And yeah. you can, interrupt your attacks even very late into them with a parry, at least mm-hmm. with the weapon I'm using. And yeah, so all of that just makes it a lot more fun to play around with parries in a way that has not clicked for me in other Soulsborne games. So kudos to Grime mm-hmm. on that front. So I have defeated the Feaster, which is mm-hmm. maybe like the third-ish boss, and so I'm going after the next objective after that, and I'm excited to continue.
Mm-hmm. Cool. Just making me want
to
play it,
it's so easy to put it on Steam Deck, and it actually does lend itself pretty well to short play sessions, because you know you can either just kind of poke around in a tunnel, or you know, just work on that boss or what have you, and I found it to be a surprisingly good fit on Steam Deck. So that's Grime.
Nice. I'm glad you're enjoying it.
Thank you for the recommendation. I also went way back in my backlog and downloaded Fez. Yeah, so this is
wow.
way back. I think I played it first when I was in college. I think it came out that long ago.
Yeah. Came out in 2012, yeah. I think.
It would have been just after college. And I like kind of played the first area, never got out of the first area, but just because I got distracted by something else and never continued with it. So my primary criteria was like games that will work without Wi-Fi. So Fez, I'll check it out.
Fez, puzzle platformer where the main like movement mechanic is it's 2D, but you can rotate around mm-hmm. on an axis from four perspectives. This is before you get into like the back half, which is about like decoding languages.
Oh, interesting.
Like that.
Yeah. Haven't gotten to that yet.
Yeah.
But the 2D from multiple angles thing is very fun. And mm-hmm. so far I always thought of it as primarily a puzzle game. But at least my experiences so far, nothing has been so difficult, that I've had to slow my momentum, if you will. So it feels more like just a mm-hmm. platformer. And hey, the 2D thing actually, you know, or the 2D that you can rotate thing, is served very well by a platformer, but it feels mostly like a platformer with some puzzle elements, which is fine. You know, it doesn't have to make me scratch my head to be able to have fun. But mm-hmm. definitely, swapping around, it's cool to see how the 3D world fits together on different 2D planes. Like there's not good vocabulary for it, 'cause it's such a weird setup,
And it's a visual mechanic. It's kind of like trying to describe Monument Valley.
Yeah, how everything fits together when it's not following the laws of Euclidean geometry, I guess, is
right.
Yeah, you're learning. It is a different form of geometry, I guess, to play with. And that's been very enjoyable. I particularly like the section I'm in now has like little bombs that you can throw that'll set off chain reaction explosions. And shifting the world at the right time to the right perspective can have that kind of chain reaction continue in interesting ways. And that's been really fun. Mm-hmm. But yeah, this has been in my backlog forever. So it was just a good one to tinker mm-hmm. around with on the cruise. Yeah.
Nice.
So that's Fez. Grime definitely got the primary amount of my time. Cool. But there's one last thing that just came out today that I will give an update on as well. If there are no other questions.
Okay. What came out today?
I'm trying to think. Well, it's a service game, so don't get too excited. The third season of Diablo 4 came out. So this is mm-hmm. Season of the Construct. Okay. Every season of Diablo, you have to start a new character to get the season's mechanics, but you get to play through kind of a variant set of mechanics that kind of throw different twists at how you build your character and how you play the game, level them up and kind of experience a new set of bosses and stuff like that as well. So mm-hmm. I am up to level 30 in this, which sounds like a lot, but is, you know, it went by pretty quickly. So I'm like 1 to 2 hours in, maybe something like that. I think it versus Season of Blood, which is the second season and was very good. The core gimmick of Season of the Construct, that's season 3, is I think objectively worse. It's not bad, but it is simpler in a way that you're going to kind of set and forget. So you get a little robot pet, that follows you around and you can program your robot with 2 attacks. And then I think, 3 modifiers for each of the 2 attacks. And so, you know, a lot of the special areas in the game are around collecting the different runes to, you know, is the attacks to plug into your robot. Fun in mm-hmm. principle, and you know, it's interesting to have a little guy following you around. But the problem is, once you pick the runes that you want, there's really no thinking left to be done.
Right. So it's just babysitting this thing as it does.
Yeah. It can't be killed. So you aren't literally having to escort quest the entire time. It is a way to give yourself a buff or kind of have an extra attack, or a little minion. But you're not gonna be actively thinking about it, the way you were mm-hmm. in the previous season, where like your skills were powered by the armor you wore and the different kind of marks on that armor. So, there was a lot more management and swapping around, et cetera, that you could do there. Whereas this, it's like, okay, my robot does this and I'm not going to think about it again, you know?
So you don't have to do a lot of adaptation with it. It's just, that's a bummer.
Sorry.
Oh, go ahead.
Does this advance the story at all?
It is a new story, which is actually, so far it's been kind of fun. So, there's this, there's a powerful wizard named Zen Cool, which I have to imagine, it's like Zenkuhl or something, but I have to imagine there was a team meeting. They're like, guys, we're at the deadline. We need a name for this wizard. He's like a Zen Cool guy. Just call him Zen Cool. We're good out here.
Name him Poochie or something like that. Man, you can ask for better. Like that is powerful weak.
It is. I guess I hadn't realized this. I'm playing a sorcerer this season, which I haven't messed around with before. And it is actually a name that's shown up in the sorcerer's side quest stuff from the game. So kudos to them. It actually is something that they planted a while ago.
Okay, so that just means they've had more time to realize that's a bad idea.
Yeah, I'm trying to figure out if there's a way to change his name.
How is it spelled? This might be, from Diablo 1.
Really?
Oh, so they might have had three decades to get this right.
Yeah, I'd have to find it on a screen somewhere, but yeah, anyway, so this wizard was like making constructs and powering them, had a you know, person he was working with, but decided it was, you know, bad news. He was getting into some dark stuff. He didn't want to go that way. So he destroyed the lab that they were working in and kind of left and you know, it was like, it'll take a lifetime to rebuild this without me. And I don't think we should do it. You know, I'm leaving. I think you should too, but you know, you chase your bliss, but I'm not leaving my work to power this thing that I think is only going to go wrong. So when you find this lab, the other wizard he was working with, was possessed by a demon and then spent his life redoing the work so that the demon can use this technology. And so this wizard is like now an old man and doesn't realize it for the first like three quarters of the mission where you meet him. So it's only when he sees the mirror that he does the Freaky Friday, "I'm old," kind of deal. Right. But yeah, well, you know, the idea that you could be possessed for your ability to rebuild this and then just lose your life rebuilding this thing that was not supposed to be rebuilt is kind of cool. And what's unfolding now is this kind of, all right, so the demon is using this technology to churn out, you know, servants. We got to stop that. But then we also probably, like, is Zenkul still around? Where is he? Would he help us if we could find him? And so there's kind of those two fronts going on of the immediate threat and then gotta recover this chosen one guy or whoever he is that might be able to help.
Yeah, he was first mentioned in the Book of Deckard Cain, which was published in, or Book of Cain, I'm sorry, which was published in 2011.
Wow.
Hmm.
Yeah, this is a deep cut then. So yeah, features him heavily. So yeah, you know, like I said, the mechanic is nah, it's not bad, but it's a downgrade from last season. Story is cool, but you're not playing Diablo for the story. The thing that I think is an upgrade from last season, and I'm very intrigued to find out more about, is the vaults, which are kind of the new special dungeons that they introduced. It's very elemental and trap focused. So, you know, you're kind of going into these hideaways of this genius inventor, right? He's going to have them trapped and kind of puzzly. And that is kind of creating a new and more interesting experience than I've seen for other places in Diablo, where you're just kind of mindlessly hacking through enemies. So I've only done one or two of them, and it is fun to be like, oh, well, this room periodically fills with fire. I need to figure out a way to navigate this. Like, it's a good change up. Mm-hmm. And I think that is cooler than the other special dungeons from previous seasons. So kudos to them on that. No. And I'm excited to play more of this.
Okay. Yeah.
Nice. That is me.
So Grime Fez Diablo 4.
Exactly.
Yeah. I have two. One of which is checking back in with something, and the other of which I have started playing but only done a couple of hours. I'll do the new one first. I have started playing Against the Storm.
Okay.
Oh, yeah.
That
looks excellent.
Yeah. So this is Cole looking for a, you know, another Frostpunk alike. This is a colony builder survival kind of thing. In kind of a fantasy setting, and you are this viceroy for somebody called the Scorched Queen, and you're being sent out to establish these villages, you know, set up these towns to satisfy the demands of the queen, you know, in this world that is constantly beset by these kind of apocalyptic rains that are going on. Hence the storm. And yeah, that's kind of the setup. So it's you overseeing these colonies that you set up. It is basic worker allocation, kind of like Frostpunk is, where, you know, you have different buildings and then you allocate people to them depending on the priorities of what you have, and you set up kind of supply chains and logistics between them in order to, you know, get what you need to survive the inclement conditions that are incoming. The big kind of, you know, change on the worker allocation formula is that you have three different species that you're working with. You have humans, you have beaver people, and you have lizard men. And they all have different preferences and different things that they excel at, and, you know, different housing needs and different kind of workplaces. So you are not just, you know, trying to use them in such a way that they are most effective, right? So, like, you know, the beavers are excellent at logging and they can do like, you know, engineering and crafting really well, whereas the lizard people are good with anything related to other animals, like, you know, meat, you know, food production kind of stuff. And then the humans are really good at farming, right? So you're doing all of that and trying to keep them happy. So you're, you know, allocating them based on what they're good at, but also trying to satisfy their, you know, not just their base needs, but keep them happy by producing kind of more complicated goods and setting up enough, like, you know, leisure kind of stuff. If they get so discontent, they start dying, they start leaving, your colony kind of starts failing.
Now, is this similar to Frostpunk in that you kind of know you're doomed? Eventually?
No, yeah. So I was going to, yeah. So you don't necessarily know that you're doomed. What is kind of the structure of this is really interesting because instead of being, you know, one town that you are working with for a whole campaign, you know, where there is a, kind of a story that is being, you know, played out as you explore more different things. This is actually structured around doing a bunch of smaller kind of like town building things. So it's a little bit roguelike in structure insofar as you're doing a lot of new starts under different conditions in order to, you know, get your colony, you know, set up, you know, as quickly and effectively as you can to start satisfying these, demands.
My huge problem with this type of game is that as you're learning it, you see all the ways you could do it better, but it is, you know, either prohibitive or impossible to respec or change the layout of your town like that. I like learning how I could do it better, but I don't like the work of going back and revising. And so this sounds perfect for something.
I would
like
almost
that.
Compare this to a Slay the Spire in that I feel like a lot of the genius of Slay the Spire was realizing that the most fun part of a collectible card game is deck building. This is kind of realizing that the most fun part of base building is actually building the base. So let's do that a bunch.
And there's meta progression. So like if you fail, within each of these little missions that you do, you have a certain number of kind of commands that you're trying to fulfill. So like, you know, like 10 objectives that you're trying to get, and you can, you know, you pick them, you know, they're in these kind of from these randomized sets of three, and you're trying to do them before the Scorched Queen's impatience meter fills up and then, you know, gets you pulled off of that colony. And then there's meta progression, you know, whether you succeed or fail, where you are doing unlocks kind of from this grander map screen, and you're picking the sites for these different colonies on this grid, ultimately trying to work out to these, you know, to these larger kind of like goal squares. And kind of picking your direction for where you're supposed to go. I was initially kind of underwhelmed. I was like, okay, is this all it is? It felt very simple compared to something like End Zone or Farthest Frontier. And it's just, oh no, this is like, it's kind of like a bunch of little micro city builders. Time will tell if this is going to be enough to like compel me. But when I realized that there was more going on, I immediately, you know, got way more interested in it, you know, compared to just, you know, running, you know, one or two of these scenarios before it opens up and shows you what the full game is.
Yeah, that's really cool.
Yeah. It's neat. I wish the aesthetic was better. I don't care for the way it looks at all. It's a little bit too Warcrafty for me, if I'm being honest with you. A little chunky, a little bit too colorful. But I am choosing to not let that so get in
you,
the way.
Do you not like the character designs?
No, and not in the game. Like the key art and stuff for them is
yeah. Because I was
going
to say I'm you actually debating. Just, you know. This is one I'm debating doing some cosplay of.
Cool. Yeah. No. Like the key art stuff. Hey,
oh,
don't
yeah,
let my
yeah.
opinion.
No. No.
Get
I'm,
in the way
I'm
of that.
Just curious. Yeah. Yeah. Totally.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't like the models. Yeah. In the game, it's a little bit too chunky. A little bit too yeah, I don't know. Just it's yeah, not to my taste. Is the thing. So, but yeah, Against the Storm, it's real neat, and I'm looking forward to putting more time into
Sweet.
It.
Woo.
Yeah. The other thing I've been playing is the Final Fantasy VII Remake, continuing to do that. I am now, so if you're familiar with Final Fantasy VII, I've gotten past where the Sector 7 plate drops, which is kind of the, you know, kind of pre-climax of the Midgar section. So I'm on like chapter 14 out of 18 right now, I think, something like that. Getting ready to go to the Shinra Tower. So I've made a good amount of progress since the last time I talked about it, and I'm enjoying it. You know, this is really interesting because it is not just a straight up remake of Final Fantasy VII in some very specific ways. It is bucking against being that, while also very consciously kind of wrestling with, you know, a force, let's say the fans, you know, or a stand in for the fans that, you know, is kind of compelling this to be closer to the story as it was originally told. So that is really neat. And it's also neat to see the ways that they reinterpret things. I bring this up just to say, you know, talk about this one thing that I think is a very positive change in relation to this. There's probably been writing about it as well. But like famous thing from Final Fantasy VII is there is a point where you go to this kind of like red light district area and you are trying to get into the lair of this crime boss, and the only way for Cloud to get in alongside Aerith you know, meet with Tifa inside is for Cloud to cross-dress. And you know, this being in the 90s, you know, it wasn't handled, you know, like super poorly, but it was very much like a like, haha, this is transgressive, you know, kind of thing. The way that they updated that to be super positive in this is actually really fascinating to my eye. One of the things that is a little bit of a bummer is so much stuff in Final Fantasy VII is like this weird little mini game where your success will determine some rewards. So like, you know, that whole section where you're in the seedy town of crime or whatever, is you're going around and doing a bunch of like little side quests to get like high quality things. So, you know, 10-year-old me working very hard to make sure that I was the prettiest girl possible, you know, so they got rid of that. But what they replaced it with was this, basically you end up, what used to be like a bathhouse kind of place turns into like a drag club. And the idea comes to you, you know, to like, okay, this is probably what we're gonna have to do. Nobody likes this crime boss, and they want you to help them take it down anyway. The whole thing is done as a rhythm game on a stage, as Cloud is up there, and you're doing like like taps to like dance along, as the entire outfit is put together. And it's this like super flashy, like super glamorous, like kind of campy, but super stylish, you know, kind of version of this. And then like the person who's the head of this place says, you know, like it just, you know, to underline this after Cloud's reveal, it says, you know, beauty is a thing without shame, and it knows not the boundaries of gender. Yeah. And like, took this thing that could have been and kind of was in its original form, you kind of like, you know, somebody's cross-dressing, and becomes this like, I don't know, like super like loud and proud kind of like examination of beauty and like this open acceptance kind of thing. Like I thought tonally that fucking nailed it. Like, I don't know, to my mind anyway, I was like, wow, that's like way more constructive and good than they like any number of ways they could have gone for it.
We always knew Cloud could slay, but now we know Cloud can slay.
Yes. Yeah. It's neat. I don't know. I was super impressed with that. Yeah. Other stuff is cool too, you know, like it's expanding the lore, and you know, the battles continue to be interesting, but like I don't know. With a game with so much legacy behind it, the way that they have decided to update and, you know, make it, you know, adjust it for modern sensibilities, to see them, you know, kind of make that decision and commit to it and be, you know, kind of like wacky but very constructive with it, was really neat mm-hmm. to me. So yeah, that's Final Fantasy VII Remake. It's neat. I want to beat it before we get to the, I think, the next one is coming out like on Leap Day, on February 29th. So who knows when I'll get around to it, but I at least want to, be caught up to date. So nothing, I've remained mostly unspoiled about what happens in this and the ways it deviates. So, woo. So yeah. Any questions about Final Fantasy VII Remake?
Nope. I still have to play it. I have it though.
Yeah. Very it's neat.
Cool.
Multiplayer.
Now it is time for the multiplayer, where we ask you a question and then you answer it. Dennis, what is the question that you asked the nice
Yeah,
people?
So Power World just continues to be such an inspiration. You know, Pokemon with guns, I think we need more games with guns, or we need to gun swap more games is the way I phrased it. So what game would mm-hmm. you add guns to, or would you remove guns from to make a completely new game?
Yeah. I'll get started here with Eli, who says, and this is a two-part, I would petition Sega to give their Sonic the Hedgehog characters more arms so they can all hold more guns like Shadow, like at least 6 guns per character, so triple the arms. I think the main problem with the Shadow game was that they didn't go far enough with the gun gameplay. They continue. Previous comment is just a joke, but my real answer is that I think I'd prefer to change a game by adding like 2 guns and 10 bullets total. Like an XCOM spinoff where the local resistance is doing their part, but can't get a hold of more than 2 guns and 3 full magazines for them for the entire game. Or Danganronpa, but every student trapped gets a gun, so 15 guns, but only 5 of them have bullets, and nobody knows who has them or how they've been distributed. Or even imagine Gears of War. You're playing as a character who's trying to get back to the surface from the Hive, and you have a fully loaded Lancer, or whatever they call the chainsaw gun, but you never find an additional bullet in the whole game.
So this actually, in a way, goes to one of my big complaints about games, which is that they don't... Most shooters only use, like, the couple of, like... well-known military guns, whereas I think something like, what was it, Far Cry 5 that was in Colorado or whatever would have been amazing mm-hmm. if you never got military hardware, you're just using things that people actually might plausibly have. So like instead of assault rifles, you know, you have hunting rifles and, you know, over-under shotguns and things like that.
Yeah. I just think this is very funny. Like bring ammo scarcity into it. Yeah. Let's see, Jala, what does Callum say?
Callum says add gun in place of objection in the Ace Attorney games.
Not like firing it at anybody, but just firing it straight into
See, I'm imagining this is
Ace
like,
Attorney Texas.
See, I'm imagining this is like oh, what is that? Four-dimensional chess with time travel, where, you know, when you go into the other dimension, it recursively does it. So when you object, you shoot someone and then recursively start a trial for the murder you just did.
So it's just nesting trials the whole way down. Yeah. Moxie, what does David say?
If you moved guns from Titanfall, it would be a bunch of dudes having fun wall running and riding in their robot fathers.
I forget what the father thing is, but I take your point.
Just Daddy Titans.
No. Dennis, what does Kyle say?
Kyle says, Just Dance series plus guns equals... Gun kata. I like this. It may not change the gameplay directly, but you have to swap your leggings and headband for a trench coat and sunglasses.
You are weirdly describing.
My god!
Is what that is?
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay.
I mean, it's a rhythm game where you're shooting pistols. And everything happens.
I'm also
on the
now
beat.
Imagining. I would love to see a super hot that instead of time only moves when you move, time only moves on the beat.
Hmm. So you're basically kind of describing almost like a crypto necrodancer.
Yeah, exactly.
Kind of
that with like VR shooting.
Mm-hmm. Let's see here. Another Kyle, I presume. Borderlands without guns. You just go around avoiding monsters and partying with the punks.
Actually sounds
pretty
good.
It was just about like just requisitioning the best party gear, the best party goods.
Alternately, having to do like diplomacy and negotiation with all these like crazy, deranged, out there characters would be interesting, just because everyone is motivated by such incomprehensible things.
Mm-hmm. Let's see here. Jala, what does Case say?
Case says, Mario with gu- Oh, wait, that's Mario Rabbids. Mario Rabbids without the guns. Make them use only classic Mario power-ups.
Agreed. Could have been Fire Flowers. Had to make it guns.
Super Mario Sunshine was Mario with guns and might have been better without.
Yeah. Moxie, what's Jeremy say?
Jeremy says, can someone give a gun to Mario?
There's a mod for that. There's a Super Mario 64 mod turns it into a first-person shooter with a shotgun.
I'm just imagining like a Dr. Mario where you just solve all your problems by just shooting the patient and be like, all right, it's done. Just Dr. Zoidberg it.
Yeah. Dennis, wrap us up with Morgan.
Time Crisis without the guns would be a completely new game. Not a good game, but a new one. This is true.
Yeah, it would just be cowering.
Cower simulator.
Yeah. Yeah. My answer for this is actually kind of similar to Eli's serious one, which is taking guns away from a game entirely is less meaningful than if you had like Fallout 3 and guns were incredibly rare because enough time had passed. But you had a make it like The Road where you have a revolver and only 6 bullets. And when to use those is more meaningful, like it is in The Road.
Man, too good to use syndrome is so strong when I have an abundance of items. I don't know what I would do if something was actually rare.
I'm just saying across a whole quest, if you only had that, there's only one shootout scene in Disco Elysium. I think that, making a game entirely devoid of violence, not terribly interesting to me. Making violence rare, but super meaningful, is. I know this was a call for joke answers. That's my non-joke answer.
Someone on that, I think it would be interesting if more of these kind of open world, pseudo diplomacy games like Fallout or stuff like that reckoned with the fact that how is your evil dictator like guy actually going to would he actually behave if there was like a non-zero chance that, I don't know, when Caesar raided that podunk town, like someone got a lucky shot and killed him? Just reckoning with the fact that, like, I can't be such a cackling bad guy that someone just shoots me in my sleep.
Yeah, you don't want to get fragged. Yeah. Is that your answer on this?
I think I have kind of a joke answer, a serious answer. My joke answer is any survival horror game. My support for that is The Bunker. My more serious answer is I actually think it would be kind of fun to see a Portal game where you had an actual gun.
Oh, that's Splitgate, and it's amazing.
I just think I would love to see kind of the comedy and jokes of like GLaDOS and Wheatley trying to come up with what sort of puzzles are they going to have you do with a gun.
And also again knowing that you could just shoot them at any time. Jala, how about you?
Duck Hunt. Take away the gun. And
you're just looking at some ducks.
Well, you could either be a bird watching simulator or you could make it like the survival kind of game where you just have like a knife and you're trying to sneak up on the ducks.
Oh, we have that. It's called
down.
Power World.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
Duck Hunt's a good answer.
Dennis,
how about
you? My answer would be Gran Turismo. Add guns to that, but like model the physics of the guns and how difficult it would be to aim and hit anything while driving at speed with mm-hmm. the same accuracy and precision that the cars are modeled with.
Mm-hmm.
So
did you ever
Gran Turismo plus The Receiver, the indie game that's entirely about every single step of reloading a gun.
Yes.
Did you ever play Mad Max?
I did for a little bit. It was on PlayStation Plus, so I got it through that.
That actually was almost my answer, is I think Mad Max makes a strong case for, like you're saying, adding guns to driving games.
Mm-hmm. But no, not in a way to make it smooth and easy to fire. Like, I want it to be incredibly difficult to keep your focus on where you're going and how fast you're coming into the turn while you're trying to line up a shot on their tires or what have you. And like fully model the impact of the bullet, like where it hits in the engine block or what place.
Oh, so like Sniper Elite in a car.
Like, yeah, change the physics of acceleration because there are bullet holes in the windshield. That's what I want.
Just to really underline what a terrible idea it is to use a gun in a car. Yeah. Cool. Well, thank you everybody for writing in. Thank you, Dennis, for posting the question. If you would like to participate in these, go to the Duck Feet Community Group on Facebook and watch for the prompts to go up on Monday afternoons.
The end boss.
Now it is time for the end boss, where we talk about the things that are happening in the world of video games and how we feel about them. Jala, did you want to do the story that you have linked here, or do you want to let the Pal World stuff be? That's cool. You answered. Dennis, what's going on with Monster Hunter?
Yeah, so Monster Hunter did an update that really should not have been that visible. They changed their DRM software.
Bad sign.
Yeah, they updated.
Capcom game, we talked about them doing new DRM last week, specifically related to trying to stop multiplayer cheating, but also to crack down on mods. So this probably is related to that.
Probably, yeah. So it's Enigma Protector or something. But, you know, if you're going to do that, you should probably make sure it doesn't break the game. So Monster Hunter Rise apparently has been very popular on Steam Deck and is now unplayable on Steam Deck because of this update.
Did it lose its certification?
Not
for
yet.
That, or?
I think it's one of those things where, like, Steam has said, yep, we see the problem, and Capcom has said, yep, we see the problem, we're working on it. It's still, at least in the article that I'm looking at, is still listed as verified on the Steam page, which it is a very interesting problem to think about, that as games become such living pieces of software, and a larger and larger audience is playing them on what's now effectively a console, these kind of changes don't have the same rigor around them than if they had to submit it to PS5 or what have you. Which means that it's way easier to have something like this crop up on the deck.
Yeah. Well, hopefully they get it sorted out. I mean, I would hate to be somebody who bought it. Well, you just have to go through the steps to return it, but like, yeah, that sucks. And, you know, for basically, I don't know, you never, if something's going to be broken, you want it to be for a good reason, not adding shitty DRM.
It's such a, it's a dumb thing to have it break over, and it's something that should not be visible in the game.
Well, and realistically, it's something that they should have tested.
Yeah, like, you got to start factoring this stuff in. And that's what I'm saying, is, like, you do have to test it if you are pushing some sort of update to PlayStation or Xbox or what have you. And, you know, while there's this verification for Steam Deck, my understanding is that it's kind of this one-time process. And clearly, this is not an update that got tested. So, yeah, I think hopefully it's quickly fixed, but it might also lead to a change in the way Valve thinks about giving out that tag and when that needs to be reevaluated.
Yeah, or how quickly it should be reevaluated. Yeah. Let's see here. Moxie, what's this Game Boy Advance stuff? I don't understand
the scanning the article. Someone discovered that this is difficult to explain. Someone discovered that they can make a Game Boy Advance game crash in such a way that it dumps the cartridge or all the data as audio, just like interprets it as as audio and basically plays the screeching death screams of a dying video game cartridge.
Yeah, so I mean, same principle for what makes a made a phone modem work.
What they then discovered is that it's possible to actually analyze that audio and get a dump of what's on the cartridge.
Oh no!
Is that different than because people have been taking ROM dumps?
This is
people have been doing that for years.
This is very much just straight up some guy found a really weird way to do a ROM dump. Like, it's not it's not clear that there's any practical purpose, and it doesn't appear there was ever intended to be. And he is upfront that, like, he had to tweak things a lot to make it work and stuff like that. So it's more just like, here's an interesting thing someone did.
Yeah. Humans do cool and funny things.
Yeah.
As someone who doesn't understand the programming side, when you talk about him needing to crash the game in a certain way to get the audio dump, is that actually like rendering the save or the game unplayable, or is it like, oh, it's fine, I just did this funny thing to it?
So it looked like he was running the game in an emulator and entered some sort of command. So I think what he probably did is just, manually fed the running program something it couldn't handle. And so probably it definitely wouldn't like actually make the game unplayable, like brick the cartridge, I'm pretty sure. And I don't think it would delete your save or whatever. I think it's just kind of poking at the system in a way it can't recover from.
Right, so just like tricking it into, okay, output all of this data, but don't output it in the way of like, sending stuff to like memory registers or printing something to the screen. Put it all through
the speaker. Like that.
Yeah.
And there's cool. actually been a couple of times, I forget, there was some Xbox game that it was like, Xbox mandated that games must have first time to load of like, I don't know, like 3 seconds or something. And they wanted to do this really over the top, like, I don't know, like rain effect or something. And the way, but that made it so they couldn't load in time. So the way they figured it out is the like random rain is just the, game interpreting the game logic as it loads.
That's cool.
This just makes me think of when I realized I could put my Jetmoto CD into a CD player and get the soundtrack, and I thought I was an elite hacker.
I've got a story. There's really not much to say about this besides, man, this is a bummer. But Riot Games just laid off 11% of their staff, 500 and something people, from a company that was considered to be pretty stable. Some very high profile, sexual harassment, stuff, aside, although you should never put that aside, generally conditions there were considered to be pretty good. People felt pretty secure. So like this coming for, Riot, on the heels of basically last year being a bloodbath for video game developers and video games press. We are already on pace, like we're like more than a fifth of the way to reaching that number for you know, reaching 2023's number, and we're not even a month into 2024. So things are continuing to be real rough as poor managerial and hiring decisions and big risks that were taken in the age of free money when those chickens come home to roost and executives do not suffer any of the consequences and instead drop that directly onto the heads of the people.
Is this a classic, like, oh, shareholder numbers need to go up, so we got to fire 11% of our workforce? Like, is Riot incapable of supporting the employees, or do they just need to hit a target number?
Okay. I've got no idea what that is. There's, you know, they put out a statement that tried to be as sensitive, you know, tried to be very, very sensitive about how they laid people off. The severance package is apparently really good, but the statement just said, you know, just, oh, it's, you know, we need to realign. We need to shut down like their single player game initiative where they were doing leaked stuff.
Oh, you mean the one that was making actual good games?
Yeah.
Yeah. Just a bunch of stuff, you know, this big kind of like realignment, as it stands. It's a real bummer, and it's going to keep on happening. You know, basically the sense that I have gotten from reading about this is, you know, so many studios are just trying to make it through 2025 right now. That is literally the runway that they have for it. So if you happen to work in games, I am real sorry about, how fucking rough things are, cause it doesn't look like it's going to be getting any better real soon. It's not tenable actually. The way that these companies are run, it's not. So I don't know. Is there anything more to say about that other than, man, this sucks?
Yeah, I would love to, you know, have a society where you can make art not depending on that art to be monetized.
I mean, monetized
at an insane rate.
10 to 50 or 100x. You can't just have a company that makes money. You know. Anyway, that sounds like an episode to me. How do you all feel about buttoning
buttons?
The credit. Thank you so much, everybody, for listening to The Level. We appreciate you taking the time. You know what to do to help out the show. Patreon, ratings or reviews, telling your friends, coming back next week. It's all good. Jala, what is happening over at Jala-chan's place?
The last episode that I released was on Biozombie, which was the first Hong Kong zombie film, which is actually like a very good slacker comedy and also a horror comedy.
All right.
When was this made?
It's very cool. It was made in 1998. It was first released in the US in 2001. They just recently released a Blu-ray that is like a remastered version that has a bunch of extra stuff on it, which I highly recommend. Definitely check that out. It was a very fun episode featuring Adelaide and Adam Bucherry. So... check that out.
This sounds really fun, actually.
It's a really good movie. You should watch it.
Cool. And what's coming up?
What is coming up next is going to be about navigating toxic masculinity, featuring our very own Dennis and also Simone, also from the Duck Feet community.
Nice.
Coming at it specifically from a parenting aspect, which is a near and dear topic to my heart.
Nice. Well, that is good to hear. You can find all of that in the previous episodes at jalachan.place. And we'll get to that. I mean, where can people find you online?
Everywhere I might be found at jalachan.
Yeah. I've been Cole Ross. You can find me on Blue Sky at Cole Ross.
I've been Dennis Furia. You can find me on Blue Sky at Furia Games.
I'm Moxie.
And stick around for some titles.
Welcome to Coal Town. My personal favorite, is this discourse generated by AI?
All right.
And Ace Attorney Texas.
Nice. I don't have any. I was lazy and didn't write things down. Most of what we talked about was actually really serious.
Yeah.
I Dennis, do. You have
I have one. I have Cower Simulator.
Cower Simulator.
Time Crisis without guns.
Yeah. Okay.
I got Foxy? Nothing.
Is this discourse generated by AI? Seems
like
appropriate.
It.
Yes.
And also by the laughs. Cool. It is decided.